Thank you for having me here today. I just want to tell you, you have a great pastor. I love Shane. Met him about a year ago, and we're doing some ministry together, but it's a little bit, it's not like hands-on ministry together, so we're not really working side by side, but we're doing some things administratively together. So I met him through Nate Templin, who is our associational missionary or director or whatever his present title is. And so I'm working with Nate, if you know him, on a church plant that your church is helping to sponsor, which is Still City Fellowship. It's the old Belmont Baptist Church. So my family and I started working with Nate last November, I believe it was, to kind of help the existing group of older ladies and a couple of gentlemen shut down that church gracefully. Now we've been praying, and the ladies have been meeting in a home in a Bible study, and now we're starting to ramp back up into a new church plant. So we had a leadership meeting last weekend, and had about 25 people there, and so that was kind of those that had come out of membership of the church. Then we have some students from CSU Pueblo, and then some families that have moved in particularly to help with the church plant. So there's a lot going on. You can be praying for that start. This summer, there'll be mission groups coming in. They're going to be doing some hands-on stuff, remodeling in the building, working in the community. I think they're going to do some things with your church as well, some of those groups, in terms of sports camps and outreach events. And then probably one of the things that seems like the Lord's putting together is maybe in the next few weeks we'll see two or three small group Bible studies begin in people's homes as folks are evangelizing. We're seeing some initial response from folks. And so gathering folks together and talking about the stories of Jesus, really just working through some of the gospel stories and letting Jesus show himself in those groups. And then probably August to September, we're looking at a public launch where we'll start regular worship services again. So be praying for that. I appreciate it. So Shane has a pastor's heart. I ask him is there anything I should be preaching on? What should I bring to his people? So he said, we haven't done Old Testament in a while. And so this week and next, we're going to be in the Old Testament. So that, I like that. That was easy for me. And he said, I mean, this is such a pastor's heart. He said, share with the people something about God's great care for them. So this week and next, you're kind of getting a little two-part series. Today's lesson or text is going to be Genesis 1. So if you want to go ahead and start turning there, you can do that. Genesis 1, I'll talk about that in a moment. Next week, I want to invite you, if you have friends or neighbors or family or whatever, we're going to look at today's text is frankly very easy. I mean, there's nothing magical about this sermon. If you know Genesis 1, you can probably preach the sermon yourself. Next week's text, a little bit more difficult, but it's a great text in terms of everybody. It's just a text people need to hear. So next week will be about suffering and trials in life. Job 1, we know, the book of Job is all about the trials Job was experiencing. So, you know, it seems silly to say, if you know someone who's suffering, does anybody know people that are suffering? Everybody's got something going on, right? Be an easy invite to church next week, and we'll just look at the story of Job and see how that unfolds and make some remarks about that. So today's sermon, I always like to help people know what to do up front, right? Whenever you hear a sermon, there's an expectation you're going to get to the end. You always hope you'll get to the end at least, right? And that there'll be something you're to do, right? Sermons are about things to do usually. And so today's to do, I mean, it's so simple. And in some ways, it's a little bit complex. All I want you to do, this is my only goal today, as I work through this and I'm praying and seeking the Lord, I just want you to believe. That's it. I just want you to believe. Next week, when we do the book of Job, there's going to be one thing as well, and it's trust. Just want you to trust. So let's talk about what it means to believe. And so on the easy side of that, we go, okay, God created the heavens and the earth, right? You already know number one, right, verse one. This is going to be all about God as creator. And deep down we go, okay, I know I believe that. And And this is where it gets a little more complicated. What I'm wanting to affect today and what I'm desiring and praying the Lord would do today for you and that he would be doing for me is to change our worldviews. So you know what a worldview is, right? It's this big concept. It's sort of like the lenses or the glasses through which you see the world. So for me, I wear contacts at night, I wear glasses. Without either, I can see nothing. I mean, I'm just blind. And so they really shape how I see things. Believe me. I've gotten now where I wear contacts and readers, and sometimes I'll wear glasses and readers on top of those. It's a big hoot around the house with youth-age kids. They love it, you know. My glasses help me see the world. And so in that sense, when I'm asking you to believe this today, the things that we're going to hear in this text, I'm asking you in a very overt way that your worldview would be affected by these things. Sometimes the things we say we believe, they're like tucked down so deeply inside. You know, we even use that language, right? I believe that in my core, right? It's at the core of my being. But sometimes the things at the core of our being, we have so much stuff kind of stuffed down on top of, the worries of the world, the cares of life, the emotional traumas you've been through, the conversations you're having day to day, and those things that are at the core of your being are just kind of stuffed down and they're not really able to get out. That's not what I'm talking about by belief. I'm talking about by believing today that every moment of your day is affected overtly by this text. All right, that's what I mean. And so then what happens is it affects your conversation, it affects the way you're seeing the world, it affects how you're seeing people, it affects how you're seeing the news of the day, it affects how you're interacting with your family and your kids and your spouses and your extended family and your students you come in contact with and your coworkers and neighbors, that your life is saturated with these things that you believe. All right, all that's preface. We're jumping in. Genesis 1, it's a little bit of a long text. Hang with me. And we're going to read all of chapter 1 into verse 2. And this is for my son, who is a big baseball fan. You know, this is the first place and maybe the only place that baseball is mentioned in in the Bible, right? In the big inning, God created the heavens and the earth. That's a joke that's from the 1970s, I know. So anyway, that was it. That's about the extent of my humor. All right, listen to this. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was over the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. And God said, "Let there be light." And there was light. And God saw that the light was good, and God separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was evening and there was morning the first day. And God said, "Let there be an expanse in the midst of the waters, and let it separate the waters from the waters." And God made the expanse and separated the waters that were under the expanse from the waters that were above the expanse. And it was so. And God called the expanse heaven. And there was evening and there was morning the second day. And God said, "Let the waters under the heavens be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear." And it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and the waters that were gathered together he called seas. And God saw that it was what? Good. And God said, "Let the earth sprout vegetation, plants yielding seed, and fruit trees bearing fruit in which is their seed, each according to its kind on the earth." And it was so. And the earth brought forth vegetation, plants yielding seed according to their own kinds, and trees bearing fruit in which is their seed, each according to its kind. And how did God see it? God saw that it was good. And there was evening and there was morning, the third day. And God said, "Let there be lights in the expanse of the heavens to separate the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and years. Let them be lights in the expanse of the heavens to give light upon the earth." And it was so. And God made the two great lights, the greater light to rule the day and the lesser light to rule the night, and the stars. And God set them in the expanse of the heavens to give light on the earth, to rule over the day and over the night, and to separate the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the fourth day. And God said, "Let the waters swarm with swarms of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the expanse of the heavens. So God created the great sea creatures and every living creature that moves, with which the waters swarm according to their kinds, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. And God blessed them, saying, "Be fruitful and multiply and fill the waters in the sea and let birds multiply on the earth." And there was evening and there was morning, the fifth day. And God said, "Let the earth bring forth living creatures according to their kinds, livestock and creeping things, and beasts of the earth according to their kinds." And it was so. And God made the beasts of the earth according to their kinds, and the livestock according to their kinds, and everything that creeps on the ground according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness. And let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds, and of the heavens, and over the livestock, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. And God blessed them. And God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply, and fill the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the heaven, and over every living thing that moves on the earth." And God said, "Behold, I have given you every plant yielding seed that is on the face of all the earth, and every tree with seed in its fruit. You shall have them for food. And to every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the heavens, and to everything that creeps on the earth, everything that has the breath of life, I have given every green plant for food." And it was so. And God saw everything that he had made. And behold, it was what? Very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day. Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them. And on the seventh day, God finished his work that he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his work that he had done. So God blessed the seventh day, and he made it holy, because on it God rested from all his work that he had done in creation. All right, that's a long text. I know in church we don't often hear long texts even read. Whew, that makes me tired enough. All right, 3 points on the sermon. First one is this. This is going to shock you. Our God creates. Right? There's no mistaking that as you read through the text. That's what's clear. And here's what I mean by worldview, okay? What I want you to get in terms of a worldview to this deep-seated belief is that when you walk out of here, this is like all of our little kids left. This is like first grade Sunday school, right? Kindergarten Sunday school. That everything that you see when you walk out this door, plants, animals, trees, even the elements that our cars are made out of, everything that we see, that you just look around and you go, "Oh, wow, God made that. God made that. And God made that. And God made that." And it's just sort of endless, right? It doesn't cease. This is the glasses with which we wear, right? This is the worldview. This is how the Bible starts, that we would get this fact that there was a God in heaven, Yahweh on the throne, and one day, when there were no days yet, and it's hard to think of time when there's no time, but at some moment, God said, "I think I'll create something." And he speaks things into existence. First thing he says is, "Let there be light." And it occurs. Now, Shane asked me to do something pastoral to show you God's care. To me, I mean, this text is easy to preach for me because this is the text for me that when I'm sitting at a red light and have like 50 seconds, okay? So I'm going to let you a little bit into my private life, which I don't like to do, and we don't even know each other hardly. So this is kind of tough for me. But in about 50 seconds, I can deconstruct my own Christian faith into atheism and go and envision living a rebellious and godless life, okay? So I pull up to a red light, which we don't have anywhere I live, so that's good news. But, you know, Pueblo is a source of a lot of bad things. I'm in Pueblo at a red light. In 50 seconds, I can deconstruct my faith, usually based in my own selfishness and wanting to do, you know, wanting to live without God and throw off the chains and shackles, which seemed like chains and shackles, and, you know, go off into some kind of sin. And when I've deconstructed it all and I go, okay, maybe this life is full of randomness and I'm, you know, I can create the world around me that I want to create and everything's just sort of happenstance. Before that red light changes, I'm back to Genesis 1:1 and I'm stuck at the fact that God created the heavens and the earth. And once I'm back to Genesis 1:1, then I'm at 1:2, 1:3, and my faith is built back up again, usually before the light turns green. And it's like, oh, wow. Everything that I see points to the fact that God created the heavens and the earth. And this world is not mine, and I'm not randomly here, but this is a world designed with intent and purpose. Now, I want to introduce you to a guy. Some of you may know this guy, some of you may not. His name is Jonathan Edwards. When we talk about God creating, Jonathan Edwards, and he's not the only one that's ever done this, you may have had these thoughts, and others have had these thoughts. Why does God create things? Why is there ever a Genesis 1:1? Because one of the things we learn about the Lord, and even this text points to this, he needs nothing, right? Our God is not, he's not lonely. He's not up in heaven and he goes, man, this is really a bummer. I'm perfect, but I'm all by myself. If I just had creation, I could do something. That's not the circumstance. When we talk about God in heaven, he's perfectly subsisting. He needs nothing. But in fact, one day he says, let there be light. And it starts this chain. Why does he do it? Jonathan Edwards, you may have encountered, some of you are old like me, and some of you may be a little older even. You used to read his sermon, Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God, in grade school. I don't think they do that anymore. And it was an illustration of basically the woes of Puritanism, this view of God being very angry. And so that's how Jonathan Edwards is kind of known these days in America. But it was really not the way he preached. He certainly preached that sermon that way, but it was not reflective of all of his preaching. Anyway, Jonathan Edwards, he wrote a document called, they had long titles, this is a shortened version, a dissertation describing the, now I've lost it, and I didn't write this down, so this may be lost entirely. The dissertation for which God created the ends of the earth, or something like that. You can find it online. You find it, that'll be good. So he writes this text, 40 pages or something, about why did God create? And it's sort of philosophical wanderings, it's theological musings, and it's a whole lot of scriptural saturation. He's just trying to think biblically, why would God have ever created the earth? And what he comes down to is this for Edwards, and I think he's right. I think the biblical text plays this out. And the big word he picks up on that you see a lot in that text is a word called emanation, with an E, emanation. And he says God longs and desires to communicate himself to others. And in that sense, creation is this emanation of himself. It's the spilling out, this communication of himself. And the reason the logic that takes him there is he says, God is this perfect being. And because he's a perfect being, it's right and it's worthy that as many people and as many things that could exist to know him could exist, should exist. It's right that God would create so that things could know how great he is. Now if I took that approach, if I went home and I had these thoughts, you know, I'm a really great guy, and so I'm going to create a world and create as many things as I can create that will know me, and that would be a great thing. Most of you would sort of laugh, and you'd be right to do that, right? We have people in life like that. I hope I'm not one. But we have people like that. We call them narcissists, right? They're narcissists because they see the world as revolving around themselves. But the reason we know that's not right is because we know them, right? They're not worthy of that sort of attention, right? They have failings. What separates God's version of this is he doesn't have those flaws. So for Edwards, he looks at God and he says, God's this ultimately perfect being. He's perfect in every way. Edwards was enamored with God's beauty. He saw it everywhere he went. And Edwards came to the conclusion as he reads Genesis 1, another text, God can't help but to create because he's so wonderful. He has to spill his very being over to those around him so that it just saturates the world. And he gave two illustrations in that text. He talks about God being like the sunlight, which we get, right? Everywhere you go, unless it's a really cloudy day, our world's affected by sunlight. You have the sunshine, you have the heat, you have photosynthesis going on, chemical reactions. I mean, all kind of things are going on. But none of us wake up in the morning and go, I wonder if the sun will be present today. Well, we just know it, right? It's just there. If it wasn't, things would start falling apart pretty quickly, right? And that for Edwards is an illustration of God's greatness in creation. That God is there and he's just spilling forth, he's emanating like these rays of sunshine to every extent to which he creates something, and they're experiencing him. The other illustration he gives is like a waterfall with a water just continually tumbling over, and never stopping. And he's just God. And the reason God's able to do that is he doesn't get tired, right? There's no end to himself, right? I mean, if I go out and work a hard day, at some point I've expended everything I've got, right? Whew, I've got to rest and I can pick something up tomorrow. God's not like that. He's always able to emanate himself. Now we hear texts like this. Psalm 19 speaks of this. The heavens declare the glory of God's. It shows the work of his hand. Psalm 96 says, the heavens rejoice, the earth is glad, the seas resound, fields are jubilant, and even trees, I'm a big fan of trees, I like to hike up in the mountains, even the trees sing for joy, right? That God in his very essence has put himself forth, and all creation is a reflection of that. Now, one of the things Edwards would do is, because he was enamored with God's beauty, and to me this is the saturation of this worldview, is he would go out in the morning and he would take this pad of paper with him, or however they did paper in that time, but these scraps of paper, and he would go out on his horse, and when he saw things that would speak to him about the beauties of God, he would write them down, and then he would pin them to his clothes. And his wife said when he would come back at the end of the day on the horse, he would just be covered head to toe in these little post-it notes, you know. It's such a cool image. And oftentimes, even in our best, we're rushing through our devotion because, you know, how do we do it? My son just graduated Friday, and he got this, he got a book from somebody, a 3-minute devotion. I mean, it's like, how quickly can we do this because we've got to get on, which I get, life is busy, you know. Your egg's going to get cold and you got to get out the door and all this stuff. So I what I'm saying is, can we live a life where we're saturated with the thought that your Father created everything you encounter? And if you do, it'll begin to change your worldview. Because what'll happen is, as you encounter with things, it'll make you grateful. As you encounter people, it'll call you to faith because it's no longer happenstance, right? The people you're encountering, this isn't a world of chaos and happenstance. This is your Father's world, and he's in charge of everything. So the people God's put in your life, he's desiring that you would emanate forth, just like the trees are emanating forth the joy of the Lord, that you would emanate forth the joy of the Lord to the people who are encountering you. And it's this invitation. All right, too much time on that. He is a God who creates. Secondly is this. He is a God who creates you in his image. You saw that in the text, right? He's creating all these things. When he gets to mankind, female and male, there's this break in the text. It's decidedly different. You get this, right? I mean, it's significantly different when you get to people in the text. Everything else he's speaking forth, there's some dominion they have, you know, area they're going to be living in. But when he gets to people, God does something different. He creates them. And so there's two versions of this, right? And so I want you to get this. We're talking about them, humankind. But I want you to be thinking about you individually and every person you come in contact with. He creates you and them and us and we in His image. Every single person you encounter. He has a purpose for you. So much so is this special that when you get to chapter 2, you get a retelling of the creation story with humankind at the center. And there we hear the story that though He speaks everything else into being, do you remember how He makes Adam? It's like God gets down on His knees and He plays in the mud. And then He sees the shape of Adam there. And what does He do? He gets down, what a humble spot, and He breathes His very life, His breath into Adam, and Adam doesn't resuscitate, that's our word, he suscitates, right? The first breath. And what breath is it? It's the breath of God. He doesn't do that with fish, right? You get that? I want you to get this. He doesn't see an ape and make him in His own image and breathe His life into him. Nothing else in the world except for you and me does God take that care with, that He puts His very spirit in, His breath, and makes them in His image. God's made you in His image. He's a God who creates you in His image, And if you believe that and you begin to live that out, it'll transform your worldview, it'll transform your relationships, because now what will happen is everything you do has meaning and purpose. You're not just a random person going through a random life having random effects on people. You're a person living under the authority of God, living out the very purpose that Creator God has for you. And that purpose doesn't cease when you're young. You're not too young to have purpose. I see some gray hairs as well. You don't get too old to have purpose either. God's got some things in mind. He is a God who creates you in His image. And the biggest notion of this is one of the things I think in the church we oftentimes kill and we squelch, is this idea that one of the biggest notions in Scripture, I believe, that it means to be created in God's image is that we would then reflect that creativity. Now, that can certainly be creativity in the arts, which I'm terrible at, but I think it's creativity in whatever God's purpose is for you. So, I do a lot of accounting. I love to be a little bit creative in accounting, which people don't like that much. I do sermons. I like to be creative in sermons. Whatever it is for you, right? God has in mind that you're participating in His image. He's put His image in you. So dream big dreams. Underneath God, in faith, when you have church meetings, large meetings, meetings in small groups, and you're talking about what can God do, start with Genesis 1. You'll have a lot bigger meetings, I'll tell you that, if you start with the God who begins in Genesis 1:1. Because a lot of times, I've been in tons of church meetings. I've been in church a long time. Church meetings are so closed to the thought that something magical could happen. And magical may not be the right word, right? Mysterious, awesome, powerful by the Lord. And we get in and we squelch our creativity and we squelch God's creativity. And we come out of the room with a business plan that looks a lot like the guys down in downtown Pueblo doing some kind of work, right? Pray in faith. Seek God in faith. Act like God's image is in you and the people around you. He's a God who creates you in His image. And in this sense, you are extending God's reign. We're almost done. I know it's getting late, so we'll go. We've got 5 more minutes. One of the things that's happening in this text, I want to point this out quickly, and then we'll move to the closing here, the last point. One of the things that's happening in this text is significantly different than what's happening in other texts of the same period. So we're very familiar with Genesis 1 if you've been in church. But if you go read other historical texts, there's many creation texts from other civilizations. And so everybody at that time, similarly timed text, they're trying to figure out, where do we come from? And ours is quite different, as you can imagine. So, for instance, there's a text called the Enuma Elish. That's the Babylonian creation text. You can go, I'm sure you can find it online. You can go read it. And the Enuma Elish, in the Babylonian text, and other texts that you'll see, they're almost all based on these pagan gods, right? Now, their pagan gods aren't like Yahweh God that we talk about, because their gods are always needy. Their pagan gods are always needy. They need people to build them buildings so they can have a place to live. They need people to give them food so they can have food. And so these creation texts, when you read these other texts, what's happening is the gods are trying to figure out a way to have their needs met. And so usually the way they work, because they're pluralistic, have a plurality of gods, is a god will create a god, will create a god, will create a god, create a god. And, you know, the gods are getting less and less as they go, and more, less and less powerful, more and more in breadth, you know, more gods. You know, so you end up with a sun god, the moon god, you know, all these things. And then somewhere along the way, some gods say, you know, they're creating these gods to take care of the needs of the bigger gods. And then somewhere along the way, the creation text for men will look like this. Some god somewhere will say, I'm tired of taking care of that guy's needs. I'm going to create a race of people, and they're going to take care of everybody's needs. And people are created to feed gods, to feed all these gods who have needs. This is why when you get to our Bible, you get things like David and then Solomon building the temple of the Lord, right? It's a house for the Lord. But how does our God react? I don't need a house, right? That's what he says. That's great, because I mean, I know every other little g god that everybody ever believed in needed a house, but Yahweh says, my house is in heaven, the earth is my footstool, right? I dwell in the high places. This is out of Isaiah, I think, 57. I dwell in the high places, and I dwell with those who are lowly of heart. God doesn't need a house. God very clearly in this text, the Genesis 1 and 2 text, and the rest of the Bible distinguishes himself from all the other gods that people were believing in as different. And one of the ways that there's different is me and you, because in those other ways, the Babylonians believed people were created because God needed them, and thus the people were put into service, right? Angie and I saw this years ago. We were in Malaysia. Malaysia has a multiculturalism of religion, so I can't remember which one this was. But we're walking down the street. People are bringing baskets of food and putting them on the street. And it's not a sacrifice of gratitude. It's to feed the gods. I mean, the gods, because gods need fruit, I guess, you know. So this exists. But you're created in God's image. And what happens is, here's the difference for you and for me. And this is going to lead us into the last point. We're created not to serve God because he needs us. We're created to share in who God is, because he wants us. He desires us. He longs for us. So we're not indentured into his service. We're actually invited to share in his reign, in his kingdom. We come in his rule, in his authority. That's what Jesus says in Matthew 28, right? This culmination. All authority has been in heaven and earth exists with me. I'm going to be with you wherever you go. He's inviting us into this relationship. All right, last one. He's a God who creates. He's a God who creates us in his image. And then finally, he's a God who created you in his image so that you might enter his rest. This is the last part right at the beginning of chapter 2. He's invited you to enter into his rest. Well, this is a big thing. There's themes you can find in the Bible that run throughout. This is one of those themes, this idea of God's rest. God rested on the seventh day. He doesn't rest because he needs to. He doesn't rest because he's weary. He rests, as we read through the rest of the Bible, because he's showing us the rest that we need. That we need to enter into what he's done, not into what we're doing. So we find this in the Ten Commandments. Set aside a day and rest on that day. We find it in the New Testament. Find it in the book of Hebrews. We'll look at a text I'll read one of those texts in just a moment. But this idea that God's created you for his rest. So we have jobs to do, right? I mean, it's kind of interesting, right? The chapter before, he gives them jobs. Go out and do these things, but enter into my rest. In your worldview, will you believe that God has rest in mind for you, and it's a rest solely based in who he is? As you go through life, this may be you, this may be people in your family, people you know. The world is full of people. They're working as hard as they can to find rest. They may not be able to put language to it like that, but they're doing everything they can. And they have different versions of what that is. They may be working hard to gain a buck, you know, so they can save and have rest later. They might be spending it all now, and they're resting in the enjoyments of life. They might be running themselves frantic in their own family with strained relationships, trying to make things better for everybody, just so they can get a couple of days of peace. And we've all done that, right? And how long does that last? Till the next family gathering, right? I mean, we do what we can, but we can't bring rest to ourselves. And God's looking and he's longing, and as he is the creator and all of this world is his, he's longing for people who will say, Lord, I'm really tired. I'm tired of my own sin. I'm tired of not measuring up. I need your rest. And he's looking and he's longing for you. And today, some of you, maybe the first day you ever make that declaration, you say, Lord, I want your rest. And God's rest comes here first illustrated by his own rest. And as it works itself through the Bible, it's illustrated by Jesus' death on the cross, paying for all of our sins, rising again, and then sitting at the throne, the right hand of the Father, for all eternity. And he's inviting us into his kingship. So are you weary? I mean, this is an easy sermon, right? Man, I'm tired. It's been a long weekend. For our family, it's been a long weekend. And we're illustrative of everybody's life. You get tired and you get weary. Can you get to the place that you give up and you just say, Lord, I need your rest? Listen to this text out of Hebrews and then we'll be done. Hebrews 4, if you want to do a little reading, you can read Hebrews 3 and 4. It's all about God's rest. The rest here was illustrated in the promised land that Joshua was going to lead people into. But then they rebelled in their own. Moses was going to lead them into, and then eventually Joshua does. But when they sent the spies in and they didn't believe God's promise that he would give them the land. Some of you remember that story. Hebrews 4, and I'm starting kind of in the middle of verse 7. It says this. Today, we heard this in Sunday school, in Dean's class as well, in the Zacchaeus story. Today, if you hear his voice, God's voice, do not harden your hearts. For if Joshua had given them rest, God would not have spoken of another day later on. So then there remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God. For whoever has entered God's rest has also rested from his works, as God did from his. Let us therefore strive to enter that rest, so that no one may fall by the same sort of disobedience. For the word of God is living and active, sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing to the division of soul and of spirit, of joints and of marrow, in discerning the thoughts and intentions of the heart. And no creature is hidden from his sight, but all are naked and exposed to the eyes of him to whom we must give account. Listen to this. Since then, we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God. He was there at the beginning of creation. He's holding all things together, and now he's at the right hand of the Father. Let us hold fast our confession. What do we believe? For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who in every respect has been tempted as we are, yet he is without sin. Let us then, with confidence, draw near to the throne of grace, that we may receive mercy and find grace and help in our time of need. God is longing for you. He says, come to me if you're weary and heavy burdened. Take my yoke upon you, and I'll give you rest. Let's pray together. Lord, give us courage today to put aside our futile ways that haven't worked. To put on the glasses of this worldview that you are a creator God who love everything you create. You've created it so that we would know you, that you would communicate yourself to your very creation. So much so with us that you create us in your very own image and call us to rest in you. Lord, help us to take courage today and rest in you alone, for there is no other that we can trust. For it's in Jesus' name. Amen.